Steve Fast with you on WJBC. We've seen so much change just in the last 20 years, 15 years, 10 years, even 5 years in how technology is influencing our lives. And in some ways, it can kind of be completely unexpected. As we mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, I don't know that anybody really saw the success of something like Pokemon Go. It's one of those things where it just becomes a cultural phenomenon. We are joined by Greg Milner, a journalist and author of the book Pinpoint, How GPS is Changing Technology, Culture, and Our Minds. And I think he'd argue a little bit more towards the latter. Greg, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
I guess I will ask you that big question at the outset. Are we just now starting to see the real promise of GPS technology in ways that it is becoming ubiquitous in changing the individual behavior that we have?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the definition of we. I mean, there definitely has been something, I think, in the last few years where it's really come into mass consciousness how, I mean, it's happened so fast that I think a lot of people didn't realize how dependent we've become on GPS and how much it's saturated our world and our culture. And like I said, Pokemon Go is a perfect example. It's not like it's the most important thing in the world, but it's an interesting example of GPS technology because it relies on a lot of technologies, not just GPS, but GPS is sort of maybe like the bulwark, you might say, like it couldn't exist without GPS. And the same can be said for a lot of things that use GPS, like, you know, drones, for example, you know, drone aircraft. They use a lot of different ways to navigate, but that's sort of all kind of based on a foundation of GPS. So, yeah, in that way, I think Pokemon Go is really symbolic of larger things going on in our world.
What's particularly interesting about this, as you say, it's the same technology that makes a military drone work is the same technology that puts a not real Pokemon somewhere out in the real world. But it is the commercialization of GPS and how it is being used in the larger sense of the incentive to make people create something like Pokemon Go that I think is the invisible part of this. What do Pokemon Go players, for instance, not realize about how their data and how their positions are being used by the companies that are providing that data and looking at that data?
I think the main concern with Pokemon Go was more that it was accessing people's Google. You know, that people may have been giving up a lot of information about their Google accounts and their Gmail accounts. However, there are a lot of location-based things that people use all the time. It's not clear to me yet whether Pokemon Go is one of them. It very well might be, but there are a lot of things where your location is being saved by, you know, somewhere else and being harvested, but not to spy on you necessarily, but more to like harvest large, you know, aggregate amounts of data based on how people move, you know, and where they are. A lot of cell phone companies are doing this. They're saving a lot of their customers' data because it's very valuable for marketers. For example, you might want to see like how people are getting to a stadium. For example, like what roads are they taking, and how, you know, how early are they getting there? What ways are they? You know, where are they choosing to park? So yeah, I mean, the potential is there for a lot of data to be saved about where we all are in the world. I mean, there's a huge economic power, I think, in knowing where everyone and everything is at all times, which is really the promise of GPS. And Pokemon Go is a perfect example of that. Like, that there's an enormous market potential in this, in being able to give people the knowledge and give other people the knowledge to know where everything is at any given time.
Well, and that's what I think is the big potential change that has crept on with us in dealing with not only GPS technology, but all of digital technology and how we think about these things. Because the entire concept of private information and the trade-off of what you give for the convenience, you know, you talk about the Google account and how some of that information may have been shared. Of course, we've seen this with things like Facebook is a good example.
Yeah.
Their ongoing push and pull of giving their customers something that they want versus the unspoken or unclear elements of how your information is being shared with the rest of the world. I wonder, with GPS technology, people want to know where they are, but I don't know that they really want the rest of the world to always know where they are and what they're doing. The concept of privacy seems to be changing, yeah.
No, totally. And I mean, one thing that I find that really interesting about GPS is that it reveals kind of larger human desires. I mean, what I mean by that is that GPS in and of itself is a pretty neutral technology. I mean, all it is a radio signal from satellites, you know, 12,000 miles away in outer space. And your GPS receiver uses those signals to be able to extrapolate from them where it is in the world. So you're not sending any information back to the satellites. It's what's called a passive system. All you need to do is receive the information, just like all anyone needs to do to listen to the radio right now is to have the radio on or have their internet fired up. And so what you find is that with GPS, for example, with tracking, now one of the fastest growing segments of the GPS industry, if not the fastest growing, is called fleet management, which is a euphemism, a very polite euphemism for GPS tracking. And it's pretty much by this point, every single person who drives a company car or a government car, not 100%, but approaching 100%, is now probably being monitored by their bosses in a fleet management package. Now that requires more than just GPS. It requires GPS to know where the car is at any given time. But it also requires some sort of communications device, usually like basically a little cell phone, that's constantly transmitting those coordinates back to wherever, back to a central computer. Now, you see there, it's not GPS per se, could not exist without GPS, but people have decided, and by people I mean we as a society, that, you know, one great way to use this thing is to spy on people. And so therefore, we've come up with these fleet management packages. Again, GPS alone can't do it, but we couldn't do it without GPS. We've decided, just like the early military developers of GPS decided that it'd be a great way to figure out how to bomb people more effectively, we've decided, like, hey, fleet management, what a great idea. Let's be able to spy on our employees at all times, make sure they're not taking too long a lunch break or taking, you know, a big detour out to pick up their kids from Little League practice or whatever.
We're talking with Greg Milner. His book, Pinpoint, How GPS is Changing Technology, Culture, and Our Minds, takes a look at the history of GPS, but also how it is changing our world and where it might be going as well. You mentioned that good example of how there's GPS in all these fleet cars and your employer can see how you're using this vehicle. But at what point do those things kind of interact and be interconnected with other ways that we use technology? Are there effective ways to create the personal and the private in a firewall of your personal technology? Everybody has a cell phone. Almost all those cell phones can be tracked.
Yeah.
And what you're doing, for instance, at work. Because that line seems so blurry between, for instance, the information your employer might be able to use or even buy yeah. from somebody if they're not tracking it themselves, and how you operate outside of the boundaries that would normally exist of work.
Yeah. I mean, what you see is a lot of people taking these matters into their own hands. I mean, there's a, just like fleet management is a polite euphemism for GPS tracking, personal privacy device is the polite euphemism used for GPS jammers. And they're very cheap things. You can buy them on the internet. I mean, they're illegal, but they're easy to obtain. And what they do is they just create a little cone of interference around you. So a lot of people who are being monitored by GPS fleet management systems have these GPS jammers now to kind of thwart them. And it's become such a big problem that, for example, on the New Jersey Turnpike, you know, out here on the East Coast, probably the busiest freeway on the East Coast, so many people are using these jammers that the area where the Turnpike goes past Newark Airport, it was actually affecting and disrupting a new GPS-based landing system at the airport. And that's how popular these things have become. So in a way, they are like little firewalls, and people have just taken it upon themselves to say, like, all right, you know, if people are going to track me, I'm going to make it harder for them to track me. It's no matter what they do.
One would think that if we have the technology now to be accessed almost anywhere in the world, and I believe that, I guess, pretty much at any point you are in the line of sight of a satellite, that there are no real blind spots anywhere in the world anymore. Is that because of the proliferation of that, or the technology is just that much better on our end?
Well, the way GPS works is pretty much every spot on Earth has a line of sight to at least four, at any given moment, four of a constellation of 24 active GPS satellites. I mean, there are blind spots, and it gets complicated if you're like under heavy tree cover or in big cities where, you know, where tall buildings can disrupt GPS. But the way GPS, in order to get an accurate GPS fix, you need to be able to receive the signal from at least four of those satellites simultaneously. Basically, what the signals tell you is that a GPS signal tells the receiver how far away it is from the satellite because it has timing information. So the receiver can figure out really down to the, you know, almost the microsecond what time that signal left the satellite and what time it's reaching the receiver. If it can do that with four of those satellites at any given time, by figuring out how far it is from four satellites, it can turn that into latitude, longitude, and altitude information as well as perfect time. So from the very beginning, that was how GPS worked. And the first satellites went up in the late 70s, and it took several years for the constellation to become complete. So like in the early days, you could only, from any spot in the world, maybe only have full GPS coverage for a couple hours a day, which is one of the reasons one of the first people to adopt it en masse were surveyors, because they didn't need, you know, full coverage. They basically only needed one or two satellites, and they could figure out, you know, where they were, how far away they were from a, you know, spot hundreds of miles away. So GPS can only work if you have a line of sight to at least four of those satellites.
One wonders then, are we on the cusp of seeing a lot of investment put in, I guess, for lack of a better word, public safety? You know, we look at things like the 911 system now, which depends upon somebody, you know, calling and telling people where they are. And we have dispatchers do that. When you can have something frivolous like Pokemon Go that is working worldwide to send people to these places and to locate and track them at any point, why do we not see, you know, the push to say, we need to have something that you can maybe opt out of, but something that will make it so emergency response has helped the elderly that might be wearing some sort of device anyway, like a life alert bracelet or something. But you don't hear that talked about as much as being something that is, I guess, a social welfare element for the GPS technology.
Well, there are certain things, like I know the law now, I think, is such that all cell phone providers, you have to have, I think your GPS coordinates are automatically transmitted to the nearest EMS station or phone bank or whatever when you call 911 for that reason, so that they can figure out exactly where you are. I just think, I mean, in terms of opting out, I think a lot of people talk a lot about privacy in the abstract, but when it comes right down to it, you know, they don't really care about it for themselves. It's kind of a fine line we all walk. Because if we really wanted to opt out a lot of things, we probably could, not just with GPS, but a lot of technology. But it just isn't really worth the hassle, most of us think. So it's, in that sense, it becomes something that we talk about more opaquely rather than something that really affects our everyday lives.
The effect that the technology has on us, it has a pull to the point where we give up a certain amount of our own individual trust and reliance to that. Anybody that's misplaced their phone for a couple of hours has that anxiety, for instance.
Absolutely.
And you get into this in your book, Pinpoint. It's something that has been written about a fair amount, is that this technology is changing our brains, our own recognition. The neuroscience says that our brains are altering to outsource it, to use the GPS technology, for instance, as an external hard drive. And there's a debate as to whether or not that's a bad thing or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's what psychologists and cognitive scientists refer to as the cognitive map. It's really our innate sense of navigation and what's called wayfinding, you know, how we conceive of our place in relation to everything else in our environment. And what GPS essentially lets you do is not use the cognitive map. If anyone who's used GPS to drive through an unfamiliar location will attest to, you don't really have to have any situational awareness at all, or very, very little. You can turn off that part of your brain. So while it's still very early on in terms of the neuroscience research done on this, I mean, whether it's actually affecting our, you know, literally affecting our brains, but that's in a very early stage. What's becoming abundantly clear is that it is affecting our navigational abilities, our mass. We're essentially eroding our cognitive maps by over-reliance on GPS because we just don't need to use them anymore. So whether or not our brains are literally changing, and they very well might be, it's very, very early on in that research, it's definitely the case that our sense of navigation is becoming just less honed because we just don't need it anymore as much.
Greg Milner's been talking to us. He is the author of Pinpoint, How GPS is Changing Technology, Culture, and Our Minds. Greg, thanks so much for chatting with us this morning.
My pleasure.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this. It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.